welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday afternoon. Joining me from Southwest Florida, Naples, Florida, is front office insider Bobby Marks. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Brian. How are we?
Good. Good. I wish I was in Southwest Florida. I'm getting a little tired of this weather.
If you're here on Tuesday afternoon, there's a lawnmower that goes by my window for about 4 hours. I think he's just mowing the same patch of lawn. Literally, it usually happens when I'm about to go on TV. The lawnmower comes, right? You know, just kind of, you just hear that vibrating, and sure enough, he's out there right now.
He's back. All right. Well, my grass hasn't grown in months. Joining us from New Orleans is Anscape's Mark J. Spears. What's up, Spears?
Look what I found in my dad's office.
is that a New Orleans Hornets hat or an old school Charlotte Hornets hat?
No, it's a New Orleans Hornets hat, man.
Yeah, that's cool, a vintage right? item.
That might be. Is that a New Orleans / OKC Hornets hat?
It doesn't say OKC on it. I wish it did. I might have to put this on eBay. I might get something for that, right?
It looks like new.
I mean, like basically new. Is. His head and my head's too big for this 7 3/8 hat.
Is that like Baron Davis era New Orleans Hornets?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Nice. They had a couple of good teams when they first moved there. And
PJ Brown, baby. Jamal Mashburn.
Oh, yeah. Paul Silas.
You know, Mark, PJ Brown, I'm going to date back 30 years. So I guess 30 years was the first player I ever picked up when I was working for the Nets as an intern. PJ Brown. And the first agent I ever picked up was Mark Bartlestein, and he was coming in to negotiate a new contract with PJ Brown and Willis Reed that did not materialize because PJ wound up going down to Miami and signing a big deal down. And what was a big, at the time was a big deal, but yeah, PJ Brown, former Net.
Well, Brian, I'm sure you, two things when I think about that New Jersey team, Brian, you had to be there at the draft lottery. Did you go to that?
2003.
Yeah, in Secaucus.
We were in a tent in the parking lot. I remember eating a pre-lottery meal. Like, we just sat around with the people. Like, there was no separation. I sat with Gordon Gunn, the owner of the Cavs, in the parking lot on the asphalt eating before we went into the studio. I was there.
Yeah. And I remember, it's funny, I talked to Stan Kroenke, and this is, for people who don't know, this is the LeBron, Darko, Melo draft, Wade, Bosch, and they had a practice run.
That's right.
In the practice run, because we got to watch all this, the Nuggets got the number one pick.
That's right. They sure did. I remember.
When that happened, Stan Kroenke went, he put his hands on his head. He's like that was the kiss of death. Like, he knew, he felt like he knew he wasn't getting LeBron when they lost the draft lottery practice run. And obviously they ended up third, and he was really sad afterwards. And I was like, well, it looks like Darko is going to Detroit. Like, you're getting Carmelo Anthony. He's like,
right.
Yeah. He wasn't that excited that night. He was lamenting over not getting LeBron. And Kiki swears to me that if the Nuggets got the second pick, he wouldn't have drafted Darko, because
that's what they all say.
The Skittishvili experiment didn't go well.
Right. But right.
That's what he says. We'll never know.
I know. That's what Jim Paxson from the Cavs said. They wouldn't even have taken. He got what I remember about that night is, so Gordon Gund, who sold the team a long time ago, 15, 18 years ago. He was blind. He became blind midway through his life. He had some sort of disease that made him blind. He's blind, but incredibly functional man. I've been to his office in Princeton, New Jersey, and he knows every square inch of it without needing anything because he just memorized it. But we were sitting there, and he was getting ready to go into the the studio. And he has one of his executives was with him, who was with him a lot. This guy named Warren Thaler, and Gordon was very nervous. Very, very nervous about, as you can, Stan Kroenke, he's a multi-billionaire. He was very nervous, right?
Yeah.
And Gordon was very nervous.
Franchise altering day, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
And, Warren Thaler was trying to calm Gordon down. And he said, and Gordon throughout his whole life, and he's in his, I think, late 80s now, had raised money to try to cure blindness for people who had this onset blindness. And he's trying to calm him down. He goes, Gordon, this is not finding the cure for blindness. You know, in other words, he was like, you know, this is not life and death here. And Gordon looks at him and goes, it's pretty damn close. And this is before LeBron played one second in the league.
He knew something. He knew something.
Are you
going to go to Wimbanyana's? I went to LeBron's is the biggest one I went to. I did go to Zion. I would still say Wimbanyana's probably number two. I wouldn't put it ahead of LeBron.
It's a big one. I don't know. What do you think, Bobby?
March 16th, Chicago.
I think it might be the biggest just based on the world we live in right now.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where how everything is magnified to the extent, especially with this player who is, you know, the next great one. You know, I don't know if they'll ever be where LeBron is or some of the other players, but I've certainly dealt with my fair share of lotteries. And after sitting through a 12-70 New Jersey Nets 09-10 team, which one day I'll write a book about, I know the losing impact of not winning. You know, Derek Favors, who was a nice player, wasn't John Wall, prime John Wall. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'd actually like to be in Paris to be at the party. He's having a party. Now, keep in mind, the lottery is going to be, at about 7 o'clock? It'll be before the Western Conference Finals. I think usually it's game two, but it might be game one. So it'll be like 7 or 8 o'clock Eastern. So that'll be at like 2 a.m. in Paris. And so Wembanyama is having he has a game that night. They have a home game that night. And then he's going to go playing, Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they're still scheduled.
Yeah.
He's still playing. And then they're going to have like this big party and it's going to be at 2 a.m. You know, it's usually like on a Tuesday night. So it'll be,
yeah, but I'm kind of France 2 a.m.
That's true, but it's still a Tuesday night, but,
it's like 2 a.m. in Miami. You know what I mean?
His agent like knows all the spots. Like when we were in Paris, we were looking around where we could film this one interview we were going to do. And his agent started taking us to various places in Paris. And like, we were going to like these 6-star hotels and he would like whisper something to the concierge and they would usher us into this back room that was full of leather chairs. And like, we would go to the place where there was some, like, some oil baron from the Middle East was staying there. And he had like $300,000 cars parked out front. And somehow we get in there and we go to some back restaurant. Next thing you know, we're in like this room where the walls are made from seashells. Like, God knows, like, his agents like have the town wired, so God knows what venue they're going to have it in. And I would just like to be there. I'm sure it's going to be a private family event. It's not going to be for media, but I think it would just be really cool because the tension in the room would be amazing. So obviously the tension in the room is going to be amazing in Chicago. it's usually during the pre-draft camp, isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't that when that happens?
Yep. And I remember the Zion one. When New Orleans got the number one pick, he just disappeared. It was like he got ushered out of a side door or something like that. I've always wanted to ask him about, like, what were your real emotions that day? You know,
maybe
in a couple of years he'll feel comfortable talking about it. But
when they went to break, the final four were L.A., New York, Memphis, and New Orleans. So, like, to me, all lottery conspiracy theories died that night because you had LA and New York, Ja and Zion, and it went New Orleans, Memphis, 1-2, New York, LA. Now that lottery ended up being huge because the Lakers pick moving up greased the skids for them to make the Anthony Davis trade. Also, it also helped that they were getting Zion. It made them more, I mean, Anthony Davis was not coming back. It was clear, but I think it made them more comfortable in doing the deal with LA. But anyway, the point is nobody is going to rig the lottery to have the Pelicans win it. Sorry, just to be honest. But speaking of Ja, so he's expected to come back in Wednesday's game. We'll see if that actually happens. He's missed 9 games, 8 under suspension. I wrote a story that published on Tuesday looking at a very interesting development that is now sort of in front of Ja. So Ja has in his contract, Bobby, what's the, I mean, I call it the Rose provision, but what's
the 30% rule for the legal, I guess the legal way to describe it is we call it the 30% rule. It's an exclusive club. I think there's only been, I was looking at it before. I think there's only been 19 players that have had that type of provision in their contract, which is basically it triggers. You can write it any way you want. You know, Ja has first, second, third team, all NBA, MVP, defensive player of the year, in there where it bumps your contract up from 25% in the first year to 30% of the max there. And it escalates from there out.
Yeah. So Ja's contract that he signed last year is 5 years, $192 million guaranteed, 5 years, no opt-outs. If he wins MVP or defensive player of the year, which won't be happening, or any of the three NBA all NBA teams, he gets a $39.2 million bonus on top of that 192. So it kicks the contract's value to 230. And I think when everybody reported it, most people said, oh, it's worth up to 230. Well, it's up to 230 if he gets this. And there's the key. It's a one and done. He either makes all NBA this year and gets it, or he doesn't. He can't get that bonus money back. And by the way, it's a pretty gigantic, not gigantic, but a significant factor for the Grizzlies, who I'm sure were budgeting in that he was going to get it. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Before he goes into his suspension, he is averaging career high in points, career high in rebounds. The Grizzlies are in second place. He was second team all NBA last year. He had played 53 games, which you may say that's not enough. But last year when he was second team all NBA, he had played 57 games. He was, I don't know about a lock, but very, very high percentage to be all NBA. And look, I'm not going to cry for him about 192 versus 230, but let's just be honest. $40 million is a ton of money. It is a huge, huge ton of money. I know that it's a little bit uncouth for players to sort of campaign for that. Most of the players have kind of stayed quiet about it. And then afterwards, if they haven't gotten it, then they've complained about it. It's not something that players have, you know, and I kind of disagree with this. I think players should kind of campaign for themselves, but whatever, that may not look great for everybody, but it's a ton of money. Okay. It matters a lot. And so the question is for the voters, there's 100 voters. They're all media members. They are in all the markets. There are 28 markets in the NBA, two teams in LA and New York, voters in all the markets, voters from television, voters from radio, voters from writers. There are international media members who do this. It's a very diverse group of people who vote for it, but it is only 100. And you have three all NBA teams. It is, by the way, I think you said, Bobby, there's 19 also this year with this same situation. There's Zion, who has to make first team all NBA to get it. That's not happening.
Yeah.
And Darius Garland from the Cavs, who would have to make first, second, or third team all NBA to get his $39 million bonus. Unlikely to happen. This is all from Bobby. Of the 16 players who've had this provision before, 8 of them have gotten it. So it's a 50-50 shot historically. There's been some very near misses. Jason Tatum a couple of years ago, near miss. Karl Anthony Towns a couple of years ago, missed. Not really that near, but, you know, Karl Towns. And then you had, like last year, Trae Young got on to third team All-NBA, hit his trigger, got his 38 or whatever.
Klay Thompson too, right? Klay Thompson missed.
Klay Thompson, that was for the Supermax, which we'll talk about in a minute. That was for, not for the rookie extension. It's very, so, but here's the thing. Let me ask you this, Spears. How do you think the voters will judge? How do you weigh the fact that Ja got this 8-game suspension when thinking about it's $40 million all NBA? There's a lot of discussion about the MVP, and we talked about a lot on this pod, but when the rubber meets the road, this is the real big decision in this award season, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, one, I don't vote anymore. So, and it's in a lot of ways or always because of this. I didn't feel comfortable voting for awards that affect money and my name being on it. So when I call it the Howard Beck rule, Howard will be mad at me for always saying that, but he pushed for the writers to have their names on it for transparency. But it's because of this that it makes it tough. I had, you know, I remember an NBA coach telling me, well, you know, if you better vote for James Harden over Russell Westbrook, man. You know, James Harden's going to give you more interviews than Russ does. You know, you should pick him because he's going to see who voted for him. And if you didn't vote for him, he's going to shun you. And I was like, wow. And then I had another player who I'll leave nameless, like, tell me, man, so-and-so didn't vote for me, man. That dude asked for interviews all the time. He didn't vote for me, so I'm not doing nothing with him no more. So there's that aspect of it as well. So that doesn't answer your question.
No, it's fair. I appreciate you saying that.
But to answer your question, when I did vote, I waited to the last day, the day after the last day of the regular season. And I don't know everybody else's thing, but I waited to that day because you have to weigh the whole season. You can't just weigh what like happened to Ja. You have to weigh his whole season. And Ja's not the only player that missed games. Like, is Steph Curry an all NBA player? How many games has Steph missed?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's a big factor.
LeBron
like
James, like yeah, how many?
Devin sure. Booker. I mean, you can make Devin Booker. He missed a whole bunch of games, right?
Yeah. So my guess is once you look at the whole body of work of everybody and all the games missed from all the stars, Kevin Durant included, right? How could you not have him on that third team at minimum? I mean, at least, right?
I think it's more of a question of, do you look at the suspension the same way you look at an injury? Or is it because he got suspended, you know?
But beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So there's like, that's where the NBA makes it tough for you because they don't give you any rules for that, right? It's just to your own discretion.
That's right. So, Bobby, this is a, you know, right now the CBA is getting negotiated, which is what this is in. I don't know if this provision will survive the next CBA. But the reason that the media has this vote, like, I will agree that it is imperfect. Okay. I've been a voter in it and I expect to be this year. The reason that this is there is because basically when it comes to judging if a young player has reached a certain threshold, the players don't trust the owners and the owners don't trust the players. And when I say the owners, I mean the whole organization, because even if you gave it to the coaches or the general managers or whatever, they would be somewhat on, they don't, the reason they picked the media, I mean, none of them liked the media, trust me. It wasn't because they were like, you know, those media guys, they really know the game. They're really smart. Here you go. They did it because out of all the bad options, of all the mistrust, they thought that the media was the best bad option. That's why they did this.
Yeah. I mean, how the rule has evolved. I mean, it was imperfect because before this was put into place, it used to be based off the All-Star game. I mean, that's how there was no All-NBA. It was basically who got voted in. I believe it was as a starter. He had to be voted in as a starter. And then that's how the Derrick Rose rule came into place because Derrick was on his rookie contract and basically had outplayed it.
He made MVP on the rookie contract.
Yeah. And that's where it's been. So it's evolved and it's gotten better here. I think it survives this next round of this current CBA. And I think including the, you know, the Supermax rule, which came into place, was that 5 years ago? 5 years ago also. I don't know what the right way to do it is. You know, my big concern always is that because there's, as you said, I guess close to 100 people, and it's up to the voters, you know, to do their homework. Is that let's say an announcer in Portland, radio announcer, and you have a vote, are you watching all of Memphis games? Are you watching Ja Morant's games? If you're on the road, if you're doing a game, and I guess that's going to be up to the discretion of each individualized person here. For me personally, you know, I think availability matters as far as how many games you play. There's no certain number that will probably change in the next CBA. And
right,
I think you go through the guard, the pool of guards right now, it's kind of a little bit of a process of elimination here. You look at, you know, Mark has seen De'Aaron Fox up close. We can make a very strong argument for De'Aaron Fox for all NBA. Gilgeous Alexander, the same thing.
Awesome.
Luka, right? You know, certainly Curry is back. Where does Donovan Mitchell fit in? Devin Booker. We'll talk about Jaylen Brown in a little while here. Damian Lillard is another. Like, the list of guards here is just,
it's
loaded.
Yeah, it's tight. It's going to be tight. And so Now, let me just say that I did some research on this. So last year, like I said, Ja made second team All NBA with 57 games played. Durant made All NBA as a forward, I think, with 55 games played. Curry made All NBA, I think, with 61 games. LeBron made All NBA with something like 58 or so. There's the games played thing, like recent history that, you know, if you've missed 20 some games, it hasn't been held against you. So that's why I think this is going to be fast. What's that, Spears?
But this is different because this is an injury. And
that's right.
So it's kind of like, does the voter have the mentality of like Bonds and Clemens and you know what I mean? Like, obviously those were drug related offenses, but if the voter votes against him, it's because they are basically, to me, essentially maybe saying that they are against what happened. And this is,
well,
your punishment.
The thing is, how much do you judge what happens outside the rectangle of the court?
Yeah.
You know,
but this is new territory, right? I can't think of another player that had a similar situation.
I agree. That's why I wrote about it, because I think it is a unique situation. My viewpoint in the past on these situations is if it's been close, if I'm debating between two players, I'm giving it to the guy who's getting the money. I do think in the Karl Towns year, I did not put Karl Towns on the team because I didn't actually think, if my memory serves me right, if I didn't actually think it was close. Now, by the way, Karl Towns has subsequently made All NBA and gotten a Supermax contract. You know, I'm sure he's still upset about that to a certain extent about the media, but I remember that year saying, I can't even justify putting him on there because it's not even close. But that's been the way I've gone, I don't think, with all due respect to Darius Garland, I don't think he, you know, and he's suffered a little bit because Donovan Mitchell is on his team. And it's a little bit, you know, when he signed that extension, he didn't know Donovan Mitchell was going to be there. And Donovan Mitchell has a very good chance of making the team. He has no bonus. Darius kind of took a step back to allow Donovan. It, you know, there's a story there, but.
And he wasn't an all-star this year either.
Correct. So that's, to me, that's not close. So like, I wouldn't consider that close. Zion is not an All-NBA player this year. He was last year. He's not an All-NBA player this year. So it's not close. Ja could be close. It's going to be close. And if I go by my path, by the way, I haven't made up my mind yet. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not saying that this is going to influence my vote. I will just say I will be interested to see how Ja handles questions in the next couple of days, because at some point he's going to come back and take questions from the media. I am interested to see how he handles that. Well, if he handles it by not answering the questions, I will take that under advisement. But I'll be just interested. I'm just interested to see how he handles that. I know he gave the interview to Jalen Rose, but he will get other questions now that he's coming back and playing. And, you know, it's a tough one. And I mean, I understand why you don't vote, Spears. I don't have a problem with it. And I don't have a problem with the transparency. One of the things that sets the media apart from the other voters is that transparency. For example, when the coaches vote for all-stars, the coaches vote for the all-star reserves, that's kept private.
Yeah.
When the executives vote for executive of the year, which executive of the year is a hard award and it's not really talked about ever in the media, but over the last 15, 18 years, there's been some wild stuff that has happened in executive of the year voting, where there is definitely, you know, agendas and clicks, you know, not clicks like click on a link, but like, this sort of group of guys sort of goes up against and favors one guy or goes against another guy. Let's just say the executive of the year voting has been strange. Not every year, but there's been some years to the point where I would say if the executives were voting, I'd like to see their names, who voted for who. So the fact that the media is transparent is the reason why I think this is more fair, because if a media voter does something wild, they can be held accountable. I mean, there's, trust me, when the media votes become public, they don't, make them public right after each vote. They make them public all in a group, like later, like in June. I would be totally fine if they made them public at the same time as the vote. But trust me, the bloggers and stuff and the agents go in there and take a look. Like, wait a minute. what did this guy do? Where did that guy's vote come from? But so I'm fine with that because, you know, the media should be held accountable because we've got this power. The other guy beyond Ja, Bobby mentioned is Jaylen Brown. Maybe Bobby, you can take us through, because it's a little bit complicated.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown thing is so important as well. All in.
Yeah. I mean, Brown is important just because a couple factors here is A, he signed what was perceived as a team friendly extension here. So to kind of unwind Boston, if Jaylen Brown, let's take it that if Jaylen Brown does make all NBA, if Jaylen Brown makes all NBA this season here, he is super max eligible for an extension at 5 years, $285 million plus with Boston. Okay. If he does not sign, if he does not earn all NBA this current year, Jaylen Brown is eligible to sign a 4-year, $165 million standard extension here. Now that could change a little bit if the new CBA rules are altered a little bit in extension. Currently, you can only extend 120% off your contract. There's talks that it could be anywhere between 140 to 150%, still below probably what the max number would be here. So there's a gap, right? There's a $120 million gap.
The way I handled this in the story, because we don't know, the numbers are moving, I said it would be at least a $10 million per year difference in what if he extended this year after making all NBA or not. But the truth is, Bobby, it could be way more. It could be 15. Yeah. Plus million dollars more, but I wasn't sure. So I just kind of hedged a little bit.
So if he, let's play it out and he doesn't earn all NBA, he's not signing that extension. A lot of it comes back to his rookie extension, which was below the max. It's similar to what happened with Zach LaVine in Chicago. Zach signed he was coming off an injury and, he had signed, he'd done that offer sheet with Sacramento and they couldn't extend him, for the max, and he'll play out the contract and he'll become an unrestricted free agent. And if he doesn't earn all NBA next year, he'll be eligible to sign, I think, a 5 years for 245, which is still a huge number. About 45, 50 million less than what a super max number is, or 4 for 181 with a team with cap space. And we'll basically be playing the waiting game as far as the future of Jaylen Brown goes.
I just think the big difference is that if Jaylen makes all NBA, he is highly incentivized to extend this summer. I don't know what he will do. He has given a couple of interviews in the last couple of weeks, one to the New York Times, one to the Ringer, where he is not 1000%, pledged his undying loyalty to the Celtics. So that's fine. I'm not going to parse that, but he can guarantee himself $280 million this summer. He is highly incentivized to sign it. If he does not make all NBA, I would say he is highly incentivized not to sign it. And Spears, if he doesn't sign it, it has nothing to do with his love of playing for the Celtics or anywhere else. He will be an unrestricted free agent in 2024. That is not what you want a star player to be. And so if you're the Celtics, even though you might be locked into having to pay Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, because Jason Tatum is going to be supermax eligible, not this summer, but next summer. He's actually going to get there this year, because I'm assuming he's going to make all NBA. I won't get into all that, but you're going to be looking at potentially paying $110 million a year to both of them down the line. I mean, not combined, $110 million combined. But Spears, you don't want Jaylen Brown to reach unrestricted free agency. And if he doesn't make all NBA, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. And I think that's something that if you're a Celtics fan, you should be very closely paying attention to this all NBA vote for Jaylen.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com, or just stop by. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
I got to know Jalen pretty well since his days at Cal. He's one of the most eccentric guys I've ever met, one of the coolest guys I ever met. You know, he's a soccer fan. He's trying to learn the guitar and speak Spanish. Like, he's speaking at Harvard. He's very brilliant, very bright, maybe one of the more brilliant, not just athletes, people that you will ever meet. And so somebody like that, who hasn't had the chance to basically be the man on his team, right? I would be very nervous about putting him in the free agent world and allowing other people to pitch at him, perhaps in cities that he could find more intriguing to live in. You know, I know he loves the Bay Area. I don't see the Warriors having that kind of money for him, but I'd be really nervous about, I think he'll get all NBA. He deserves all NBA. But if he somehow becomes a free agent, I could see him going elsewhere just to try something new and to be the man.
Yeah, so it's a big vote. The thing about Jalen, Bobby, is he kind of plays forward and guard. And this multi-positional thing is where all NBA gets a little bit squishy. Like, for example, last year he got a couple of all NBA votes. They were all at forward. If the league allows people to vote for Jalen Brown at both guard and forward, which I expect them to do, it's not a decision yet. That'll make a big deal, because you were talking all about all those guards. The forwards, because of injuries, the forwards are a little bit softer this year. Zion has been out. LeBron has been out. Kawhi has played, you know, I will still consider him, but Kawhi has not played a full complement of games. Anthony Davis not played a full complement of games. He, you know, Anthony Davis won't make it at center because of how strong the center position is, but he could make it at forward. There's more of a chance at forward than guard. So that could be a factor here. Like, if you're a Celtics fan and you want to keep Jalen Brown, you maybe should start a campaign, vote for Jalen Brown, and vote for Jalen Brown at forward. like I know that this is like buried in nuance, but like that's, it could make the difference between keeping Jalen Brown and not. So it's kind of important, I would say.
They need to send those postcards to the voters' house, right?
Well, so there's only 100 voters. That's the thing. Yeah. It's not like the Heisman where there's like 3,000.
Yeah.
There's 100 voters who decide this.
Well, I think you could even, guys, I think you can make the argument that Jalen has been more consistent than Jason Tatum. You know, certainly,
especially the second half of the year,
certainly since the All-Star break here. And I know, you know, Tatum, you know, got out of the gates quick, and we talked MVP about him in the beginning here, but you know, Brown hasn't missed many games at all. I mean, I think he's on pace to play the most games in his career. And you look every night, he's been the most consistent of the two here. I mean, Tatum's hit a little bit of a, I guess for how we view Tatum, a little bit of a rough patch here.
So Jackson, our producer, pointed out he's a big Syracuse fan, so it's not a surprise he would go digging on this. He pointed out in reference to Ja that in 2006-07, that was the year where Melo got suspended for the fight at the Garden, 15 game suspension back then.
Spears, were you at that fight? Were you at that game?
Yeah. I could tell the story, but it's kind of funny. But I was not at that game because I was at somebody's college graduation. So Chris Dempsey went for me. But I was watching it at home and was like, wow, of all the games I missed, I think it was like a handful of, like I don't miss the New York trip, but it was at that time, it was important. I'll just say that an important graduation to attend.
You were a younger man.
We're all married men, right? Like, so, for somebody else at that time.
You were a younger unmarried man then.
Yeah.
I just remember, I don't know if it was Melo. Did he hit Marcus Camby? Is that who he hit?
No, he hit It was a guy that's not a big name guy.
Was it Ronaldo Bachman?
No. It wasn't Bachman. Bachman was chasing him. The guy's name was.
You could hear on about the,
this recently.
You could hear the punch on the TV. anyway, he made third team All NBA that year. So I don't know if that sets a precedent, but it is.
Well, he got 15 games, which isn't a precedent now.
That's right. Exactly right.
Which is like hilarious when you see like.
While he's looking that up, Bobby,
Marty Collins.
Marty Collins.
Oh, Temple. Yeah.
Marty Collins.
First round pick.
And Mello was recently on this podcast, $1 million worth of game, and he wouldn't say his name, but he wouldn't say Marty Collins' name out of respect. He didn't want to embarrass him.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about that game, which has never been talked about or isn't talked about enough, was there was this battle between George Karl and Isaiah Thomas. And George Karl was mad at Isaiah because I guess Larry didn't Isaiah like push Larry Brown out or was perceived that he did, right?
Yeah. Larry Brown pushed himself out, but yeah, I mean,
but
yeah,
you know, it's a North Carolina mafia. And George, he'll be mad for telling me the story, but I'm gonna tell it anyway. George ran up the score on the Knicks to give it to Isaiah. And left his starters in. So, like, Melo's still in the game. Camby's still in the game. Like, J.R. Smith are still in the game. And Isaiah tells Melo, hey, man, somebody's going to keep hurt, get hurt if y'all keep trying to do this. And that's when J.R. Smith got, like, hacked. He brought Marty Collins in to foul somebody. And that's when that happened. And then, so basically, if George would have just taken these guys out, because this was at the end of the game, instead of like leaving Melo and JR, like all their stars in, it never would have happened. But because he wouldn't take it out, because he's trying to run up the score, you know, Melo ended up being a part of this altercation. And so after that, I had wrote basically something about what George did. And it was the only time that Doug Moe got mad at me, man. Doug Moe came back and had some words for me about saying it. But he got over it quick because I think Doug knew I was correct.
Doug Moe is a legend.
George put them in a really bad spot, man.
Yeah, Doug was George's assistant. Doug was George's assistant on that Nuggets team.
Yeah. Amazing guy. Love Doug Moe.
Oh yeah. So all Jackson is now, you know, Jackson's he's stumping for Ja here. He's like McMahon for Kyrie. He also said that Ben Wallace made third team All NBA the year, the Malice at the Palace. I don't remember what Ben got.
But what did he do?
I don't remember what Ben did. So I have to.
Steven
anyway,
Jackson.
One thing else. No, he did not.
David Harrison did it.
Neither did Mr. Artest.
And Artest did it. Yeah.
No, we didn't see Mr. Artest. I don't believe.
Oh no, Jackson. That one. Good try. Good try. I don't know about that. I love you.
Before we move on, I just want to say something, Bobby. So if Ja does not get the bonus, it would save the Grizzlies $7 million just next year alone. And then it would increase up to $9 million in the fifth year. They're up against the tax. They've got Dylan Brooks to re-sign. They want to extend Desmond Bane. Like, if he doesn't get the bonus, I'm sure that they budgeted him to get the bonus. It might make a significant difference. You know, at some point, I think the Grizzlies will go into the tax. Robert Parra, their owner, has paid the tax before. And I suspect with this team, he will pay the tax again. But that could make a difference with their offseason moves. They could still re-sign Dylan Brooks and maybe even stay below the tax if Ja doesn't get that bonus.
No, you're right. I mean, Brooks is extension eligible now. I don't think he'll, you know, 4 for 52. I don't think they're going to go in that direction. But $7 million does make a difference, and they've done a really nice job balancing just because they've drafted well in Memphis here, and they've signed players to good extensions. The Brandon Clark extension kicks in next year, and he's going to be out for an extended period of time, but right. You've got Dylan Brooks coming up, and then you've got Desmond Bane rookie extension eligible this offseason that kicks in 2024. And I think if you're Bane, you're probably looking at it where the hero numbers and the Jordan Poole numbers going there. I think where Memphis could benefit, guys, is, you know, we'll see hopefully in the next couple of weeks
or week, you know, some of these CBA changes is there where maybe the brackets get expanded a little bit from the tax perspective, and it gives right. teams a little bit more flexibility to go into the tax and still get some type of distribution back. That could alter things, but $7 million with Ja certainly is a start.
So hey, Spears,
Brian,
you have a
Brian, yeah. real quick question. So this shows my ignorance and not having voted. Is the center still on there?
It is, but shenanigans times five. The league last year allowed people to vote for Embiid and Jokic as a forward or a center, which was ridiculous because they knew that the two of the three, you know, there was 1-2 in the MVP. You know, when she,
but all-star starters are three front court players.
That's right. Exactly. You know, so like, you know, I don't know when the all NBA started, but I mean, you know, Chamberlain and Russell were going back on the MVP. Like if Bill Russell finished second to Will Chamberlain in a year and, you know, and he was second team, it was just, you know, I don't know. The position part is flawed. And
if you could make it your commissioner for a day and one of the things come up, would you just make it forget the positions, just top five players?
I might do what we do in the All-Star, which is three front court, two back court, yeah. because I do think you need to protect the positions a little bit.
Yeah. So to finish but up there, on that, let
but
me
the funny thing
this.
Is, Spears, as you know, there were years
yeah.
where guys made all NBA first team because they were centers when yeah. they were not one of the five best players. We are in an era right now where
maybe
more
not
than
even. Yeah, the third team all NBA center probably was in the top 25 player.
Dude, and there could have been in that different era, there might have been some third team all NBA centers that became Supermax eligible.
Yeah.
You know, and you were like, wait, okay, I'm ready for my Supermax. He'd be like, about that.
So to kind of just put a bow on what you were saying about Ja, in essence, for him to make it, he has to be a top six guard.
That's right. Which, by the way, he was last year, and I would say was locked into a month ago. And
so I still
think he's got a strong case. So
I'm trying to think like who was in that mix. Like,
well, like Bobby said, like before this happened, Ja was on pace to play 70 some games. So like,
yeah, but I don't think it's games. If the voter doesn't put him in, it's because it's a suspension that they're weighing on.
I agree, which is why
yeah.
I think not necessarily for me, but I think what Ja says to the media in the next few days could potentially affect some voters. And so I would just keep an eye on that.
Mm.
So, okay. all right, Spears, you had a story on Anscape today about Josh Hart, who is having a spectacular time as a member of the Knicks since the trade deadline. They had a rare loss with Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson in the lineup on Monday night, even though Julius Randle scored 57 in the Garden against the Wolves. The Wolves had a really surprising and good win. And it sounds like Karl Towns is getting close to returning. And Anthony Edwards also may be close to coming back from that ankle injury. But they go into the Garden without Towns. Obviously, they've been out without Towns since November. And without Anthony Edwards, and take 57 from Julius Randle. I've been critical of the Western Conference's inability to handle their business. So I have to take my hat off. They handled their business there. They had six guys in double figures. And Torian Prince, he had 35 points. Maybe he's played a better NBA game in his career. I don't certainly yeah. remember one. But anyway, the point is, you write about Josh Hart, and this story is essentially an advert. I don't know if it was an advertisement. That sounds strange, but it's like what he said in your story is why people want to play for the Knicks, but nobody seems to ever want to play for the Knicks. But in this story is what it sounded like to me about Josh Hart, basically singing the praises of loving being in New York.
Yeah, no, he's a Silver Spring, Maryland native. His wife, he met his wife there in high school, played at Villanova. He's an East Coast guy. So, you know, obviously his career has had him in a Lakers uniform, in a Pelicans uniform, in a Blazers uniform. His wife is pregnant with twins. And when you're you guys know when you're playing for Portland, this is respectful to Portland, and you're an East Coast person, you might as well be in, you know, on the other side of the world. It seems just so far to your friends, your family. And so Josh was telling me that his wife wasn't really getting as much help as they would like, because that people were like, that's just so far, go to the Pacific right. Northwest. But now that since they've been back, you know, even when the Knicks went on a road trip, one of his wife's friends stayed with her for a week, kind of helped her out. They're closer to home, to family, to friends. He said it's, you know, he has a lot of family members that are coming to games. He can't go anywhere without somebody from Villanova shouting him out. And then another thing is, he's like, he's expected to opt out of his contract, and he wants a home. He's had several different head coaches. This is his fourth team. He's not 10 years into the league. He would really like to make New York his home and put in some roots there. And he actually even took a little shot at Lakers celebrity fans too. It was kind of interesting. He said, like, the Knicks have celebrity fans that really actually care about the game, which I was like.
I've gotten to this argument before about celebrities at Knicks games and celebrities at Laker games with people, because, like, that LeBron record game, the celebrity situation there was wild. There were, like, pretty significant celebrities sitting, like, in the 10th row because they couldn't get any closer.
Yeah.
And I was telling that to somebody from New York who's a big Knicks fan, and they were just shouting me down, listing off all the celebrities who come to Knicks games and know the game better. So that's not an unheard of thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I always marvel in being at the Lakers game and the celebrities that all they do is walk around the court for, like, the whole game just so they could be seen.
Yeah, there's the club where everybody, where all the courtside seats can go, is like a decent walk. And when you come back from the club, just the way the sight lines are there and you walk behind, you can, like, almost be on a runway. And it is kind of not unheard of for people to come back late or leave early to go to that club, to be on that runway for everybody to see.
Yeah.
So Bobby, Josh Hart he has a unique contract, and he's, you know, his value is probably higher to the Knicks than it is to the market. So I don't know how that's going to go.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a June 24th player option in his contract for his last year, right around $13 million. The likelihood is that he probably exercises that and becomes a free agent. If he doesn't exercise it and opts into the contract, the Knicks technically could waive him and get salary relief. I don't think that will happen. How the contract was written up. It gives you like a 24 hour window to do so. I mean, the contract was done with New Orleans during, and that was a long drawn out process. That was him and Lauri Markkanen were basically hand in hand as far as how long that their free agency period went. But so he's got the option. He can opt in, then he can extend if he'd like for another 4 years, or he can kind of play out free agency as an unrestricted free agent here and see what, as you know, Mark has written, you know, certainly New York would like to be the home. They've got some salaries, you know, they've got, you know, with Barrett and kicking in next year and Brunson and Randall, I'm working on some offseason things right here. And my big question for New York is not really about this upcoming offseason. It's about how much value do they have in flexibility for this offseason of 2024, where it could be their next big bite at the apple. But they've got to figure out Hart, Emmanuel Quickley's extension eligible here. As you guys saw this offseason with Jalen Brunson, even if you're over the cap, you can always figure out ways to get under. But I would think that for them this offseason, Hart is probably priority, and he's, you know, certainly carved a nice role with this group coming off the bench.
So here's what I think about the Knicks. They have two, what's the proper way to say this? I don't want to be offensive. They have
two A's.
No, they have two handfuls of trade material, in my opinion. They can make, in my opinion, Bobby, I don't know if you disagree, they can make two big trades if they had to. They have coming into this summer. They have the expiring contract of Evan Fournier, which can act as ballast in a trade. They have a bunch of younger players that people are interested in. And they have something like 9 tradable first round picks. In my view, they could trade for 2 star level players if they needed to. It doesn't mean they'd have to do that deal. Those deals in the summer of 23, those deals could be made within the 23-24 season. They could be made in 24. But they can hold, in my opinion, they can hold Jalen Brunson. They can hold Julius Randle. And they can make 2 giant trades. Now, whether they can hold Brunson, Randle, and Barrett and make 2 giant trades, that would depend on the players. But there is even a window that they could hold all 3 of those and make 2 giant trades. Whether or not it's going to require, I think, a player to say, send me to New York. And potentially another star player to say, oh, I'll go to New York too. Or for New York to pull a big trade and then a star player going, oh man, they got this and they still got this. I want to do that. I kind of compare it to where the Cavs were in 2014. The Cavs had stuff and they had space, and they used the space on LeBron and they used the stuff for Kevin Love. But I thought this about the Knicks for a while, and it's never happened. But the way they've positioned themselves, and because they have done such, because they paid Jalen Brunson, you know, he got $100 million, right, Bobby?
Yeah, 100+. Yeah, 100+.
It's an excellent contract,
and it's declining. It's a declining number too.
So the Knicks are positioned. Leon Rose has put them in position. Now, getting in position is not the hard part. Executing is the hard part, but he's put him in position. And I read this piece that Spears just did with Josh Hart, who's singing the praises of how happy he is in New York. Now, granted, they've played really well since he got there. I mean, call me crazy, but I see it aligning. Now, I don't know if people are beating down the doors to play for Tibbs.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. But I don't know. I think that the Knicks are in an interesting position going forward. Before we go, Bobby, I think we should talk a little bit about the Utah Jazz, who, against all odds, have, and potentially against the desire of their franchise, have crawled back into the play-in situation with a couple of wild wins this last couple of days. Walker Kessler with a block to beat the Celtics at the death. And then they play the Sacramento Kings, Mark Spears, Sacramento Kings. And I know we're not going to slander the Kings with Mark Spears in this podcast. The Kings are, with the exception of the Sixers, the Kings have pretty much been the most impressive team for the last couple of weeks. Kings come into Utah. De'Aaron Fox has a great game, 37 points, shoots the heck out of it. Sabonis did not have a good game. But the Jazz sit Markkanen and Jordan Clarkson due to injury. I believe they started 3 rookies. This was their starting lineup for this game. Kelly Olynyk. Okay. Backup, who's starting? Walker Kessler, rookie. Talen Horton-Tucker, maligned kind of bench player. Ochai Agbaji, rookie. And Simone Fontecchio. Is that how you pronounce it? Did I say that correctly? Who's a rookie that they signed out of Italy. And they won that game. They won that game. Agbaji had like the game of the season. They had seven guys score in double figures. Okay. Like they had two-way guys getting it done out there. And so so here the Jazz are. I don't think that they wanted to be there. They were doing a really good job of kind of quiet tanking when they traded away like, you know, half their good players at the deadline. And they very happily were sliding down the standings. Now they've jumped the Lakers and are in 10th place, Bobby.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with how good of a coach Will Hardy is. And Mike Brown's going to win coach of the year, or at least he should win coach of the year. But I was thinking last night, if we had an all NBA coaches first team, I think he would be on it here. But you look at what they did with their, a lot of it has to do with player development. Azubuike, who they drafted a few years ago, didn't even pick up the team option in his rookie contract. He has 13-8. Chris Dunn, who they had signed to a pair of 10 days and now rest of the season, he had 18 points. Rudy Gay, 11 points here. And it's, you know, and then you mentioned Kessler and Agbaji, guys like that. I mean, a lot of it is like they've found guys that have kind of fit roles. Dunn was with the Washington team, the G League team. But they found guys that just fit. They just fit roles here, and they play hard every night. And Walker Kessler is.
I liked him in college, though. I think people slept on him. I liked him.
I mean, he averaged like five blocks a game at Auburn. When he started at Carolina, he's got a really interesting journey.
Athletic.
Yeah, and they've you're right. Like I think if you asked them, if you gave them a truth serum, they'd like to have the 10th pick in the draft or 9th pick in the draft and having a shot at getting to one here. But they might.
By the way, they have the Timberwolves pick.
They do.
The Timberwolves miss the playoffs. They have their pick unprotected too. Don't tell anybody.
So that was a huge swing game last night in New York. You know, that could have went. You know, they lose that game in New York, and
it was a bad night for the Jazz. The bad night. Their pick positions both deteriorated.
But they've done a great job just finding, from a development standpoint, kind of the next man up mentality.
Yeah. No, Walker Kessler, I picked him up on my fantasy team, and he's helping me out, man. I picked him up about a month and a half ago. People probably like raised an eyebrow at it, but.
You know, I'm not an expert on scouting. You guys know I don't know college players. I was watching the FDU Purdue game, and I've had people friends of mine who are college fans who don't understand why Zach Edey, who's probably going to be the national player of the year from Purdue, the 7'4" guy, they say to me, well, how come? Cause I don't even know if he's going to come out, but yeah. I think Givony has him in the 30s or maybe even in the 40s, the second round. And they don't understand why, you know, like, how come, you know, they say to me, they go, what about Walker Kessler? I'm like, well, the difference is that Walker Kessler
can move.
Is a tremendous defensive player and can really move. And like, if you watched what happened in that Purdue game, like FDU just put Zach Edey in rough pick and roll situations. And they just took advantage of him that way. And then they just fouled the hell out of him when he got near the basket. It's off-putting to NBA teams. You know, even though Zach Edey has gotten better, it's off-putting when a big man just can't move very well, unless he's so sensational.
That
they can overcome it, but
maybe he's a little certainly shorter. But is Garza a comparison?
Well, I think people like Garza. He also went to Iowa, right?
Yeah.
People like Garza because Garza, you know, can really shoot.
Okay.
You know, he'll have he's already with his second team, I think, maybe his third. But
Minnesota,
Garza,
right?
Yeah, but he got drafted by Detroit, I think, but. People like Garza can really shoot, but he can't really defend. But Kessler can defend. Kessler can move. And you see his impact on these games.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. So, all right. Thank you to Mr. Spears. Thank you to Mr. Marks. Thank you to Jackson and Bruce, our producers. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. We'll talk to you with the Tims on Friday. Have a good week.
Peace.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.